Well, I will tell you that as a legislator, I'm a proponent of any bill, regardless what the bill does. If there is sufficient support, enough signatures to get it referred, that is the right of the people. Under God, the people rule. I think we need to be very cognizant of that. So if there are enough signatures, we should never be afraid of the people voicing their opinions on any bill.
Welcome back to the Interview Podcast from Milbank, South Dakota. This is Craig Weinberg. TheInterviewPodcast.org is our website where you can find all the shows, all the conversations that we've had, and where you can help support the show. Click on the support button. You choose the value that you got out of the show. Turn that into dollars. Send it back our way so we can continue having these conversations. Running for South Dakota District 4 State Senator is Fred Deutsch, who's been on the show before as a House representative for District 4. He's now running for Senate. We have an interesting conversation about kind of his legacy and what he's done in the Senate or in the House so far, and why he is the guy to send to the Senate on June 4th at the primary, because in District 4 there is no Democrat running. And so the primary for the two Republicans running for the one Senate seat in District 4, the primary will determine the winner and who goes to the Senate in November. Thanks a lot for listening. Hope you enjoyed this chat. I hope it helps inform you a little bit on how to vote and how to think about these politicians. So thanks, Fred, for coming in. Hope you all enjoyed this chat. Have a good one. Let's get right to it. You know who Harry Shearer is?
Harry Shearer. No, I don't.
He is Derek Smalls on the band Spinal Tap from, anyway, back in the 80s. He also is one of, I think, 19 voices on The Simpsons.
Oh.
He has a radio show weekly called Le Show. But you have a similar sounding voice. I think you could totally emulate.
What's his name again?
Harry Shearer.
Harry Shearer. Okay.
He's hilarious. Anyway.
Well, I've been told I would probably do well on radio, but I don't know. You have to be smart on radio, I think.
Do you really?
Well,
you've listened to radio before.
Okay.
So, Fred, you are running for District 4 in South Dakota, District 4 Senate.
That's correct.
There's one seat available.
Yes.
You have been in the House of Representatives for a total of 8 years.
That's correct.
And now you think that it would be a wise choice to move to the Senate. Do tell.
Well, you know, I've thought about running for the Senate. I've been encouraged to run for the Senate for many years. And I've always thought it would be selfish to do that.
Why?
Well, because I think we have a good senator. I don't always agree with all of his votes, and he doesn't always agree with mine. But he's experienced. He knows how to get things done. He's been there in the Senate as long as I've been in the House. And it takes people who are willing to step up to the plate and put themselves in a position to get things done like John Wick has done.
And just to be clear, not the assassin, John Wick.
Yes, that's right. I'm talking about the guy from Grant County. Mm. You know, if I take him on, one of us takes the other out, and we lose all that experience. So I've always wanted to wait until he is done, until I step forward into the Senate. I think I have the qualifications to do a good job. I'm a critical thinker. That chamber is a little more, I don't want to give the false impression, but I'm going to call it a little more cerebral, a little more thoughtful, a little more studious, and that kind of fits me. The House is a little more rambunctious. You know, there's 70 of us in the House instead of 35 in the Senate. So when Wick termed, I decided to run. And, you know, of course, I've got a newcomer that's going to be running against me.
Is running against
yes,
you.
Yes, is running against
so
me.
So could you have run for the House still? Could you have gone for another
term? I could
term?
Have. I could have served one more term.
Okay. Are you going to win?
Hope so. I think so. I really do believe it'll be a close race.
And the way it works in South Dakota, at least currently,
mm-hmm.
because the Democrats don't put anybody up.
Right.
The primary becomes the general election.
That's right. Yeah. Whoever wins.
So whoever wins the primary June 4.
That's right.
Which is a week and a half away.
That's right. Winner takes all, loser goes home.
Mm-hmm. Why you at this point?
Why me? Why am I running?
No. Why should you get the tick mark on the ballot?
Oh, that's a good question. Thoughtful question. Well, lots of reasons. I'm experienced in getting things done for District 4. I know how to work with people there. I know the players. When a county school, a community school, was threatened with closure, they came to me, and I brought a bill to keep it open.
What school? What community?
North of here, Big Stone. 5 years ago or so, they were threatened with closure.
Yeah? Well, yep. They're closing now.
Well, now they are, but I kept them open 5 more years.
Did that? That was your bill?
That was my bill.
That's not something you should run on, Fred.
Well, I'm just saying.
I have several people that I currently know that don't like that because it increased their taxes outrageously.
I guess we can talk about that.
I don't know the numbers. I just know that that jaded them against the current politicians because of that.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, the data.
So the taxes did not increase?
I don't know the answer. I'm not going to say something if I'm not absolutely sure. Okay. Point being, they had a problem. I solved it.
I want to sit here for a second because the school's closing. They have to close.
Yes, they do.
After the end of next year because they didn't meet enrollment requirements based by the state.
That's right. 5 years ago, they didn't meet enrollment requirements that weren't fairly enacted for schools that were not K-12.
So what's the win then? What did they win? If all they got was 5 more years of extension.
Well, we didn't know it'd be 5 years. We thought it'd be ongoing. We thought they would be able to maintain their enrollment. I mean,
But the legislature can't be that dumb. Wakestone City isn't growing.
I wouldn't ever agree to somebody saying the legislature can't be that dumb on anything.
Okay, I'll concede that. Fine, you're right. I'll give you that all day long.
I mean, you know, I'm here to tell the truth. So, anyway, can we go back to the original question?
Well, no. I mean, it's you. I mean, you have a record you want to run on.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. I mean, I was proud to make an adjustment so that the state would consider schools that weren't K-12, because prior to that time, our enrollment requirements were all based on K-12.
Okay, so you couldn't have just an elementary school?
No.
Like they do there?
No, you couldn't. You had to have 100 kids, no matter what grades.
Across the grades.
That's right.
But you had to offer every grade.
You had to have 100 kids in your school based on K-12. And I said, let's make a proportional analysis. If it's 100 for K-12, let's make it whatever the number is, 67 for K-6 or K-8. So we just made it proportional. And we thought that would keep the school going. But obviously, things happened.
Well, but, I mean, if you think, if that's the thought behind the law change, that isn't an unreasonable position to hold. And if it was done because we think Big Stone City School is going to be awesome and we want to keep it going forever, that's probably not the best position. But if it is, we want to make it to where you don't have to have enrollment across the board. What's the value in having, I guess what it goes back to is, does the state want to have schools that aren't K-12? Is that the fundamental question?
No, I think the fundamental question is what's fair for the communities.
Yeah, well, no, right. But what I'm thinking is, was the original law that got adjusted to then allow for proportional numbering, counting, was that in place because there wasn't an appetite for non K through 12 schools in South Dakota?
I don't think I'd describe it as not an appetite. It just wasn't something that was practiced outside of Big Stone and its unique arrangement with its border school, you know, in Minnesota. Are we ready to move on?
Go for it.
Okay. So the question you put to me was why me?
Yeah.
And the answer is because I've brought bills for our communities. That was one example. I'm a problem solver. Last year we had a bill to rehabilitate the rail line from Milbank to Sisseton. The Senate had an appetite for it. The House didn't. I was able to encourage the House behind the scenes to move forward on considering funding for that. And when the two chambers had a disagreement, WIC and I worked together to create a unified bill with the same language that we then both got passed through our chambers. So those are just a few examples. Secondly, I will tell you that I show up when I'm needed or asked to come to meetings. For example, last year in Milbank, there was a meeting about problems with children, law enforcement kind of problems. Chief of police was there. People from the school was there, the mayor was there, state's attorney was there, and all the legislators were invited. But who came? Just the guy from Cottington County.
Who doesn't live here.
I was the only one. You know, and I'll tell you what, our job is to show up to meetings. If we want this job, then we come to the meetings that are important to come to. My opponent was out golfing. We had a golfing engagement for the GOP. I canceled, and I came here. This was my priority. So, have I been perfect? Hell no. But I show up. I think the biggest picture, the biggest reason, Craig, why I'm diving back into another 2 years is because I care about the future for our kids. I am not happy with the way the world is going. And I look at South Dakota as an oasis. And boy, you know, in peer every session, it's the tip of the spear, the two sides butt heads. And I'm not afraid to defend our values, to defend right to life, to defend our children from transgender surgeries that mutilate their bodies. Well,
What's the underlying issue there?
What's the underlying issue of that?
In that, why is that an issue today in South Dakota?
Well, because we've got a lot of mental illness that's seemingly spread through the internet and social media. That's at least what the experts tell us. And there are places in Sioux Falls that make a lot of money off these kids.
So is it financially driven?
Oh, absolutely. It's
exclusively?
I don't know. You know what? These providers that used to do the services, because they can't anymore, it's illegal.
In the whole state?
In the whole state, yeah. And in fact, in
don't
much,
worry, Tim Walz opened up Minnesota, so they can all go there.
Yeah, well, that's true. In much of the world, it is now illegal. United States as a whole is very progressive and still doing these procedures on kids, except in the states that allow it. I was the first one to bring legislation, first legislator in the United States. We didn't get it passed that first year, but I shared it with other states, and now 23 states, I'm very proud of that, 23 states protect their children from this kind of silliness. So is it exclusively financial? Who can say, but it's very, very lucrative. And the data to support it, the medical data is not there.
Well, it can't be there from everything I've heard, just simply because there hasn't been enough time to actually study it. And yet, there are proponents that trot out some sort of science that they're trying to produce.
I would disagree. There hasn't been time to study it because there's been just recently they came out in Great Britain, which had one of the highest populations of these gender confused individuals, and they did an extensive study on the medical data and found that it does not exist. It is not there. Many of the studies have been of low quality, that just do not support it. So they have stopped doing it in Great Britain and in many of the European countries that used to be very, very progressive on this issue. So I simply bring that up because, there are 105 legislators that go to peer, and we all have different areas of expertise that we bring. It's a citizen legislature. I have been involved in a legislation that has protected children, the unborn, protected these vulnerable children that suffer from gender dysphoria and others. So I feel an obligation that I need to continue that work.
Talk about SB 201.
I voted against it.
I'm looking here. Hold on. Not the piece of paper I wanted. All right. Trying to find the actual text of this bill.
Sure. I've got it in my computer if you want it.
The title of the bill, provide a new statutory requirement for regulating linear transmission facilities to allow counties to impose a surcharge on certain pipeline companies and to establish a landowner bill of rights. That's the title.
Okay.
The talking points that I was given by the side in favor of this, they claim that it does 7 important things.
Okay.
This bill.
All right.
One, minimum depth of 48 inches, a full foot beyond the requirement. Number two, lifetime drain tile damage repair. Number three, leak liability protection. Number four, indemnity for landowners. Number five, filing of ag impact mitigation plan. Number six, dispersion analysis report disclosure. And number seven, require land agents to have a tie to South Dakota. So this is called the Landowner Bill of Rights. This is what the talking point going out is. Is it? And does it protect property rights? Now, this was passed and signed by the governor.
It was.
And it is, there's currently a campaign to get it referred to the public for a vote in November.
Mm-hmm.
And the correct. Episode right before you of this podcast was with Amanda Radke. And she's a big proponent of getting it referred mm-hmm. and defeated mm-hmm. ultimately in November.
Sure. Well, I will tell you that as a legislator, I'm a proponent of any bill, regardless what the bill does. If there is sufficient support, enough signatures to get it referred, that is the right of the people. Under God, the people rule. I think we need to be very cognizant of that. So if there are enough signatures, we should never be afraid of the people voicing their opinions on any bill. So why do you think the industry is so concerned about the people having the right to say yay or nay?
Oh, I know why.
Okay.
Because from their perspective, the people are too stupid to understand it.
Well, you could say that about any issue, right?
Of course.
But it's still...
Because the experts are always the expert.
Yeah, I get it. But it's public, right? And so the public has the right. I'm just a spokesperson for the people. I just try to assess their yays and nays and vote their majority views. That's really my job. And if the people want to override me, God bless them, let them. It's their right as an American, as a South Dakotan. So I have no fear.
Does that negate the reality of being a representative republic?
No, it doesn't, because...
Because it isn't the democratic quote unquote process to put our representatives in place.
Of course.
And then it's up to them to make the right call.
Sure. That's representative democracy.
It's not
America.
Otherwise we would have mob rule.
Well,
right.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but we were the first state in the United States to introduce direct democracy through the referral process. First state. So it's a historic pearl for us. It's not an easy thing to get the signatures. You have to work it. Landowners all over the state have come together and they are working hard at collecting the required number of signatures. And if they get that done, it'll be on the ballot and the voters will have a say. And especially on something as controversial as this. Initially, this bill had an emergency clause mm-hmm. on it. Well, it's gone through 13 revisions between when it first started in the House and when we ended the session. 13 revisions. And guess what? That emergency clause came off. Well, you know why? Because the emergency clause requires 2/3 of the legislature to support it. They barely had a majority. I think, so the majority in the House is 36. 70-member House, 36 is the majority. You need 35 is halfway plus one. Well, it eventually passed with 39. Okay, so they had a couple of votes. But two-thirds, you need 47. Whoa, guess what? When they were first writing this bill, they thought everybody's going to support it. But they found out in a hurry that the people aren't behind it, and a lot of legislators aren't behind it either.
Well, in the Senate, there were 10 no votes. In the House, there were 31 no votes. So, yeah, that's...
So that's why the emergency clause came off. And the emergency clause simply allows this bill to be enacted immediately upon the governor's signature instead of waiting till July 1st.
And it, which, there are few times when I think that is necessary.
Well, yeah. You know, it's called an emergency clause. It should be called something else. It's not really an emergency. It's, let's get this done in a hurry for some reason that somebody thinks important. And it might be important or it might not be.
I think that should be limited to very, and used very sparingly.
Yeah.
Okay, so you voted again. So you were one of the no's, correct?
I was, yes.
Are you happy with that vote?
Well, it was a tough vote.
Why?
Well, because there's so much controversy, and frankly, because I got threatened by Jim Sauer from Glacial Lakes Energy. He said, Fred, you either vote our way or we're going to get you the hell out of office. We're going to vote you off out of office. We're going to campaign against you. We're going to spend money against you. And indeed, they are. You know, my opponent's got thousands of dollars showing in her public report now from Glacial Lakes Energy and from the pipeline company, from lobbyists all over the country. And so he's making good on his threat. But threats aside, I work for the people. I don't work for corporate America. I like to do what I can to help business grow. I think that's one of our obligations as legislators, to be open for business. I like that motto. But open for who and for what? And against who and against what? So the people put me in office. I represent them. And so I don't regret the vote, but it was a hard vote. I will tell you on the other House bills, HB 1185 and HB 1186, we had two votes on each of them, and each time all four votes, I supported them. So in essence, I was a split vote between the House bills and the Senate bills. Politically, that doesn't help a lot because you make enemies on both sides. But I thought in my heart that it was the right thing to do.
So, according to this document that I have.
Yes.
Again, given to me by our friend, the senator.
Yes.
HB 1185, the benefits of that. Are two, apparently. There are three benefits of that. One of them is information disclosures. Okay. Survey and access rights. I'm not sure what that means. Access payment to landowner. Now, my understanding of that is if they come on your property, they have to pay you $500. That's or true. They have to pay you, is it a dollar per linear foot of piece of your property that they're on?
I think that's
something
been
like
changed.
That. Was it?
Yeah, that's an older version.
Okay.
I think now it's 50 cents.
So it's less?
It's less, yeah.
And then 1186 has mortgage limitations. Okay, define that. Limited duration, so 99 years. Interestingly, I was in Uganda a couple months ago and talked to a young Ugandan man who started buying up land and, you know, kind of investment properties, which it's a little different thinking, but according to what he told me, you can't own land outright forever in Uganda. It all has either a 50 or a 99-year term, essentially.
I see.
And that's nuts. So that kind of made me think of that here.
Yeah.
5 years to get going. That's a talking point. 5-year non-use restriction. And then easement must be in writing. What? Does that not already exist?
Yeah, you would think so.
Why is that? The fact that that's a talking point just blows my mind.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of talking points. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors in this.
Well, that's the bigger issue. And how many landowners were involved in drafting these?
Zero. Yes, that's right. This was drafted by legislators the industry. This is really, these bills were put together by the industry. And we know that, it's public record. There were maybe a dozen bills. I don't know the exact number, but close to a dozen bills on this issue. The bills that were brought forward by landowners were quickly killed, either in committee or on the floor. They died very quick deaths. And the three bills that went forward, 1185, 1186, and SB 201, were marketed as a trio by Mortenson and Crabtree. Mm-hmm. They were the primary authors in a very divided chamber. A lot of smoke and mirrors. On SB 201, the Bill of Rights was something that somebody came up with at the last moment with the last draft. It summarized either existing law or portions of the bill that were put forward in earlier sections. So when you read the last section of the bill, SB 201, it lists the Bill of Rights, quote unquote. and after each subsection, it says, per subsection XYZ earlier in the bill, this is what you get. So it's somewhat of a summary. It's not really what I would consider a Bill of Rights. And frankly, how do you provide rights to individuals who aren't involved in the drafting of the bill? You had the folks that have everything to gain, they're at the table. And the folks who have everything to lose, the landowners, have nothing to say. How does that work? Is that fair? That I find very challenging. So the essence of SB 201, the real cut to the heart of the bill, is elimination of local control. That's the essence of it. The industry did not want to have to deal with different counties, different setbacks, different regulations. So now there is no local control. It's all up to the state. There's going to be one standard that the state must apply. If a county or municipality wants to map a certain route, they no longer have the right. That's why I voted against it. Local control is too precious for America. It's a foundational piece of our democracy. And if you can't have input, if you can't say what should be a proper route for a dangerous or potentially dangerous pipeline, why do we have local control? Schools have local control.
So this is specifically regarding carbon dioxide pipelines.
I think SB 201 is any kind of linear transmission. So not just...
Okay, so Section 15 of the bill, which is a new section added to Title 43. This is where it says Sections 14 and 15 inclusively of this act may be cited as the Landowner Bill of Rights, the piece you were just talking about. This is the end of it. It says any landowner granting a carbon pipeline easement has the following rights. So is carbon pipeline defined? Is this limited exclusively to a carbon pipeline? Section 1 says pipelines for the transmission of carbon dioxide are not subject to any discretionary formulas authorized by this title. Carbon dioxide, isn't that what we exhale?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I'm confused as to why this even needed to exist. Was there any talk about why this even was a question to begin with?
Yeah, there was lots of talk, but it's who listens. You know, this is the result of the Green New Deal. This is the result of trying to open up new markets, particularly in the West Coast.
To do what? To pump air to them? Let's just blow out of our mouth toward the West, and we'll get there.
Yeah. Well, there are those on the other side that say this is such a financial benefit, such a financial boom to South Dakota that we have to take advantage of these carbon credit scores, which is what the federal government has enacted to allow these ethanol plants to create a scrubbing, if you will, of their CO2 that they used to blow out into the air. Well, now they're going to capture it, and they're going to compress it tremendously and put it 4 feet in the ground in pipes. It's going to be liquid CO2. Instead of gas, it's compressed so highly that it becomes liquid, and they're going to take it out to North Dakota, and God forbid there's a leak like there was not too long ago down in Louisiana. Now, they say that these pipelines are not dangerous, but there have been leaks, and the leaks can be deadly. So shouldn't it be up to the landowner to make the decision if it's dangerous or not? It's on his or her land. Shouldn't they have the right to say yes or no?
Now, these entities that put these pipelines in, are they government agencies?
No, they're private. This is private. Yeah. Private agencies, non-governmental, for profit. This isn't something that anybody can benefit from financially.
They can't?
No, you have to buy in.
Oh, I see. Well, at the top of this Section 15, a new section that added, it says, any landowner granting a carbon pipeline. Does that imply that the landowner can say no?
I don't think so.
Was that brought up? Like, if this company, if they've got 10 of your neighbors and they've got this thing ready and you are in the way, and I say, I'm not into that, what happens?
They take you to court, and they...
But this Bill of Rights doesn't give me any protection against protecting my land?
No, it does not.
This is not a Bill of Rights, then.
That's correct. It is not. It is not a Bill of Rights for landowners.
Correct.
Yeah, right. That's right. No, they declare eminent domain. They
How? Hold on. How? A private entity can't declare eminent domain.
Well...
Can they? In South Dakota? In not, South Dakota
well,
law?
Well, they're not supposed to.
So do they then convince some government agency to declare it? on their behalf?
A judge. They convince a judge.
And a judge will come down on the side of a private company, for-profit company, to take away someone else's land rights.
We shall see. I
if this thing does not get referred and defeated in November, the state of South Dakota is even more screwed than it was.
Don't disagree with that.
I
wish other solutions could have been reached. I wish the landowners could have sat down with Crabtree and Mortenson.
Who pays them?
Who pays Crabtree and Mortenson?
Of course.
The people.
No, who's on their, who are they beholden to?
Oh, well,
to push
sure.
this through.
Sure. Yeah, of course. They're working on behalf of the industry. So not likely that would have happened, but it'd be my wish. If this gets referred, well, who knows what'll happen? I don't know. We'll find out. You know, the other issue with this is, you know, this is a single bill, SB 201. Legislators take 400 to 500 votes every year. I've been there 8 years, so 500 votes times 8, you know, a lot of votes. People will probably make their decision on how to vote for a legislator based on this single bill. And I think that's unfortunate.
Why? Because if this is so important, now I'm thinking those that would be upset because someone voted for it. And then they get voted out because of this. What if it doesn't actually protect private property rights?
Well, it's an important issue, but it's not the only issue. I mean, we have life and death issues that we deal with. You know, capital punishment, abortion, life and death. If you don't have life, you got nothing. This is irrelevant if you're not being born. And so is freedom of speech and freedom of owning a gun.
Well, yeah, but once you're born, what's the next most important thing?
Well,
bodily autonomy.
Sure.
And that has to extend to your private property too, doesn't it?
Sure, sure. I'm not saying it's not important, but I'm saying there are other important issues, you know. I mean, we would not have this huge fight. I got more email on this than any other issue ever, ever, you know, thousands.
For or against?
I was about between 3 to 4 to 1, in support of, how I voted on SB 201.
Okay. So most of your constituents said this thing doesn't need to pass.
Correct.
Do you think that was that if you had sampled the state, that would have been the case? And that those that passed it just weren't listening?
I think that ratio holds throughout the state. I think everybody voted what they felt was best.
Well, I hope they did. I do, because otherwise they shouldn't be there.
Yeah, right.
Like every vote someone takes, they should have a principled reason why.
Well, you'd hope so.
They shouldn't be hauled in a back room and said, "Hey, check this picture out. Do you want it to be public? By the way, vote this." No.
Yeah.
That's not what we want. Now, unfortunately, I think that's what happens a lot more than we all want to admit. But
yeah. Yeah. Well.
Okay. So you are on what appears to be the property owner side of this.
I would
private
say.
Private property rights.
Yes, I would say so. I will tell you, I went to meetings from both sides. Summit Carbon had gatherings, and the landowners had gatherings. I went to both. I listened to both. I listened to my constituents. I read every darn email. My eyes were crossed. I still got them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an emotional issue.
What are you going to do if you don't win?
Oh.
Actually retire?
Yeah, you know, I've got 4 daughters and 9 grandchildren, and there's 3 months out of the year that I can't really be with them. They're not in the area. They're all over the country. Mm. So those 3 months, I might go spend time with them. I don't know. You know, life goes on, and I feel blessed for the last 8 years that I've been put in a position where I can have a voice on protecting unborn babies, on protecting vulnerable children, vulnerable women, helping to protect the little guy. I mean, I think the landowners are the little guy in this, you know. I feel blessed that I've been able to do that. There are a lot of legislators that just don't step forward. It's just not in them. And if it's God's will that I'm to do something else, I trust God's will.
Summit Carbon Solutions, I'm looking at their website right now. Is it their entire goal to run a conduit between all of these ethanol plants throughout the upper Midwest? That's what the map looks like.
Yeah.
We will dig more into this. This is fascinating. As you've looked back over your time in the South Dakota governments, and, you know, no matter what happens, I mean, if you're in the Senate, you'll be there 2 years.
Sure.
And then possibly 2 more, and that's it, right? Or is it
eight?
Can you go four terms?
Okay. Yeah.
Heck, at the end of those, you'd be old enough to try to run for president. So maybe there.
I could probably compete with, one of those guys that are running.
What's your most the word has failed me. The most satisfying accomplishment you've had in your time in public office so far?
Wow.
Maybe impactful is the better word.
Impactful. What comes to mind off the top of my head is the most immediate bill. You know, I worked with the governor on bringing forward this anti-Semitism issue. We helped a lot of Jews here in South Dakota that were really frightened. That was very satisfying. We brought legislation that other states are going to emulate. States with larger Jewish population than South Dakota, we showed that it can be done. That we can create legislation to protect Jewish communities. You know, the world is just crazy with what's going on now. Ever since Israel was invaded. And, you know, you look at what's happening in our schools and our universities all over the country. I'm really concerned that we keep all that out of South Dakota.
But by singling out a people group, don't you set a precedent that every people group needs singled out protections?
Not necessarily.
Why is this different? And I mean, nationally even, and maybe internationally, why is this a different scenario? Why does this not set the table for every entity that is this people group gets their own special bills and laws and protections?
Well, I would tell you that the Jewish people have been throughout history abused and cast down upon, insulted, that with such an uprising that's occurring throughout the world and including here. We heard examples of how it's happening here in South Dakota.
But is that just words? Is it just people saying mean things?
No, there's lots of examples of anti-Semitism that it's not just words. It's actionable things.
Are there no other laws that exist that would address those actions?
Not in the context that what we provided in statute.
So did we make another set of laws that makes the penalty different?
No,
for being equally bad.
No.
I guess I don't understand the whole point of that bill then, because if laws exist that would have addressed the crimes that were being committed, why do we need another law to redefine
them? We clarified the definition of anti-Semitism in statute.
Okay.
So without a definition, how do you know what is anti-Semitism? We brought that forward.
What bill was that? What number do you know?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see here. I don't know if I have access.
Was that House bill, Senate bill?
No.
A joint resolution?
No, it was a House bill because it was my bill and I'm in the House.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. No, it says no internet, so I can't help you.
Be a guest network sitting there.
While you're looking, let me just say the
1076, is that the one?
That makes sense.
yes.
The other bill that comes to mind I'd mentioned earlier mm-hmm. that was really satisfying was the bill to protect gender confused children.
Mm.
That was a ferociously fought bill. Sanford especially brought their doctors and their medical students, you know, all in their white coats to come testify against the bill. And
what was their argument?
That these children, if they're not provided the opportunity to have these changes, would likely become suicidal. That they're we're putting these children at risk.
Now, are these children, were they able to make this call on their own, or did they have to have a parent's consent?
Well, ideally, you always are to have a parent's consent.
Well, right, but from Sanford's position, were they wanting the kid to be able to come in on their own and have these things done? Or did that not come up?
That wasn't really part of the discussion. It was to provide these children the right to have their anatomy sliced and diced,
mm-hmm.
you know, to remove healthy body parts, to take hormones belonging to the other sex, cross-sex hormones, to block and stop their puberty. And as I said, we didn't get that done the first year, but in subsequent years, we did. So it's been a multi-year battle. And finally, when we got that done, it was Bethany Soy, Representative Soy, actually brought the final bill that crossed the finish line. That was very satisfying.
All right, House Bill 1076. It is a violation of this chapter if any adverse or unequal treatment prohibited by this chapter is anti-Semitic. In reviewing, investigating, or deciding whether an alleged violation of this chapter is anti-Semitic, the Division of Human Rights must consider the definition of anti-Semitism. For the purpose of this chapter, the term anti-Semitism means a certain perception of Jews that may be expressed as hatred toward Jews, including rhetorical and physical acts of anti-Semitism directed toward Jewish or non-Jewish individuals or their property, or toward Jewish community institutions and religious facilities. Nothing in this section may be construed to diminish or infringe upon any protected right under U.S. Constitutional Amendment, I or SD Constitution, Article, whatever. Including rhetorical and physical acts of anti-Semitism directed toward Jewish or non-Jewish individuals. What? This seems like an unnecessary bill.
I don't think so.
Because it just, by Jewish and non-Jewish, that opens, everyone. What's the purpose of this bill then if it literally says everyone?
You can commit acts of anti-Semitism by, for example, painting a swastika on a Catholic priest's house.
That's anti-Semitic?
Could be.
According to whom? The Division of Human Rights? What's their? Here's what I struggle with is when we make laws to sit on top of laws. It's like people say, "Oh, we need a law to say you can't text and drive." Why? We already have a law that says you can't drive distracted. That exists already. Why do we need to add more on top of it?
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't disagree with that, but sometimes clarification can be helpful.
I'll concede that, but this doesn't, because it says directed toward Jewish or non-Jewish. So now what are we defining? There's no clear definition in this.
Well,
it's the term anti-Semitism means a certain perception of Jews that may be expressed as hatred toward them. What's that mean? Now we can't hate someone?
It's been a while since I looked at the bill, but look, there is a reference to a website, correct, in the statute.
I guess I'm not looking at 2013. Let's see. Definitions, because it adds to chapter 2013. I don't know.
Yeah, there is a reference to a website that includes examples of anti-Semitism. I mean, Craig, I'm sorry, but you kind of look Jewish.
I am.
Are you? I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so there you go. That's probably why you do.
But I don't.
You could have a yarmulke on your bald head.
I could. I do. You just can't tell. It's flesh colored. No, I.
Are you Jewish?
And German, shockingly.
Wow.
I really struggle with laws that try to combat someone else's thought.
Where in there do you see the word thought?
The term anti-Semitism means a certain perception of Jews that may be expressed as hatred toward Jews.
There has to be an overt.
But I don't care. But to me, it makes no difference. If someone hates someone because of who they are, why is that illegal? Why should that be criminal? Now,
It's not. Unless you.
But the goal of this is to define anti-Semitism. Well, now I hate, if it comes out that I may be expressed as hatred toward Jews. So that gets defined now. Someone gets to say, oh, no, you were hating them. You were expressing hatred toward them. So now you're anti-Semitic, and now this is defined in the law.
It must be actionable. It must be overt. It's not a thought. It's taking action. So the bill.
But again, that exists. If I take action against someone to harm them, it doesn't matter why I did it, does it? Why would that matter?
You don't necessarily have to harm them. You could.
Whoa! What?
Doesn't there have to be a victim?
It could be actions against a synagogue that's anti-Semitic.
But there's a victim there. But again, why would it differ? Why would the severity of it differ just because of the kind of facility it was?
All the bill does, right, is define what anti-Semitism is. And if you would access the website, you'd see a lot of examples to help the Department of Human Relations. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice.
Human rights.
I've been talking too long. to help the department make determinations.
So what this feels like, because it's the same. It's the whole idea of hate, of having hate crime legislation. What in the world does that mean? It's difficult to define a hate crime. But lots of places try to enact hate crime violations or, you know, statutes and all this stuff. Whatever. I just think that when we have to go down the road of separating out people groups, I don't care which kind of people group, doesn't matter. Then you have to be willing to do that for every kind of people group. And if you're not, then you're not honest about it. Because then you're playing favorites. Then at the government level, we are creating favoritism for a people group that we may like or not like based on whatever. And this certainly feels like this is a knee-jerk reaction to something that's happening on the other side of the world today.
Well,
in the last 7 or 8 months.
I wouldn't agree.
It's
a response to help our Jewish community here in South Dakota who were being injured.
Okay, examples. Are there any?
Universities here in our state.
Being injured? The university was being injured? Laws that are on the books being broken?
I'm probably not at liberty to talk about what I know with those issues, because I think there's probably still some litigation going on. But
that would imply that we could probably all assume that current laws on the books were being broken, especially if there's legal going on. I'll go on that limb and kind of make that thinking, but I don't have any insider info.
Sure.
But
what I can tell you is that we had testimony of injury, of harm, of concern from Jews here in South Dakota.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Where does it end? To me, that's the bigger issue. If we're going to say you guys get special treatment because you're here telling us your anecdotal stories. Fine. But nothing, no problem with that. But if we say we're going to give you special treatment and nobody else gets that special treatment, that's where I think we run into problems as government. And so I guess where does it end?
I don't know. If I had a crystal ball, I could tell you. If I knew the human heart, I could tell you.
Well, you know that, and it's wicked, right?
Well, that's right. You know, someday I'll get to heaven, maybe, God willing, and I'll have a better view of where it ends.
Where is it?
I don't know.
I enjoy these conversations. This one. You may not, but I do. Where can people find you? Because it's the 24th. It's almost Memorial Weekend.
Yes.
Then June 4 is the primary. It is Election Day to determine whether.
Yeah, that's right.
Who gets sent in November? Where can people find you and find information?
Oh, well, I've got a website, freddeutsch.com. Call me on my cell phone, 868-9010. I don't mind giving it out. I'm a public guy right now. I'll get a new phone if right? I lose.
<I'm> burning. Fantastic. As always, I really do appreciate you coming in. I don't want to take up more of your day. We've been a little over an hour now, so this is good.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back to knocking on doors and kissing babies.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. That's what politicians do, you know.
Oh, they do. Bite your bottom lip and never mind. Fred Deutsch, you are candidate for District 4 Senate in South Dakota.
That's right.
State Senator. Yeah. I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah.
It's always fun to connect.
Yeah. It's fun to come and visit and, you know, always think new thoughts or think through old thoughts. And see all the gizmos and gadgets and wires.
You mean my chaos here?
Yeah.
I haven't had someone in studio for so long because everything is remote now.
I'm honored to be here. And really, this kind of reminds me of like a mad scientist's laboratory.
The reason we don't show that side of the table.
You need some test tubes or something.
Man, some bubbling, yes. Lava lamps in the corner.
Yeah. Have we really been going for an hour?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
No, see, it's just...
time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fred, come back for sure. No matter what happens.
Yeah.
It's always fun to chat. And
yeah. Thank you.
Stay connected. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Fred. FredDeutsch.com is his website. TheInterviewPodcast.org is our website where you can find the rest of the conversations and where you can help support the show. Remember, telling people about this is also a phenomenal way for you to help support the show. So thanks a lot for listening. I hope it was informative. See you on the next one. Have a wonderful week. We will see you on the next one.